Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
We observe today not a victory of party, but a celebration of freedom.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the independent republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
The human zoo, where they don't hide away the sick animals.
Dangerous mid-morning debate with the great dictator.
The independent republic of Mike Graham.
Stand to attention when I talk to you!
On Talk Radio.
Yes, mess!
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. The world of politics has taken a strange turn overnight as Tory leader Boris Johnson has been accused of appeasing socialists by doing away with some cuts to corporation tax, while Labour's Jeremy Corbyn spent much time yesterday convincing the CBI that it was nonsense to suggest that he was anti-business. Tonight, they will go head-to-head in the first TB debate of the election campaign, and the big question is, will it change the way you're thinking of voting? Yesterday, Joe Swinson and Nicola Sturgeon lost their legal challenge to join in, so it'll be a good old-fashioned prize fight with only one winner. And already, Boris Johnson has written a letter to Jeremy Corbyn outlining some of the questions that he's going to ask him. He's going to attempt to pin him down on his own personal policy on the European Union, leaving it or staying in it, what he wants to do about freedom of movement, what he wants to do about a whole host of other things as well. We'll be bringing you all the news from it as it happens right here on Talk Radio. We're going to talk to Stuart Jackson very shortly, former MP and former special advisor to David Davis, the Brexit secretary as well. 03444991000. Later on today, we'll hear from Shadow Chancellor John McDonnell, who will take Labour back to its roots by attacking a £100 billion tax giveaway to billionaires, as they're calling it. And the Green Party will be vowing to spend £100 billion of their own on saving the planet. Where did all this money come from? And can we have any of it, please? 03444991000. Meanwhile, back at Buckingham Palace, Prince Andrew's still in hiding after his horrendous interview on the BBC on Saturday night. The front pages are still full of stories of city backers abandoning him and yet more women coming forward to condemn his friendship with paedophile Jeffrey Epstein. There's lots more going on, of course, and we want to hear from you because you are the people who matter in this election campaign. You are the people who are going to elect the next government of this great nation. 03444991000. You're listening to me, Mike Graham, right here on the fastest growing radio station in the world. It's Talk Radio.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
So I don't think there's an issue in British, modern British politics which has had more speedy kind of attachment, that's had more speedy kind of adoption than the green issues. You know, we know all about Greta Thunberg, who's currently on her way back across the Atlantic on another ship from the one that she went on some weeks ago to go to the United Nations. She worked out that she couldn't get to Santiago, so she's come back to go to Madrid. Everybody talks about green issues. Everybody tries to recycle. Everybody tries to drive less. Everybody tries to fly less. People tell us all the time that we are one of the greenest countries in the entire world. And yet, we keep being told that we're not doing enough. Let's talk to Amelia Womack, Deputy Leader of the Green Party. Amelia, very good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
Thank you so much for joining us. I mean, I'm not being facetious when I say that people in all parties have now adopted a very green agenda. I mean, you must feel a bit sort of peeved about that in a way.
Not peeved. I mean, we are the originators, the instigators, and we've been there since the very beginning. And I think that it's been important that we've been promoting this for so many decades that has meant that it's become popular to other parties. I'd say that in terms of policies, though, the fact that we do have a blueprint on how to tackle the climate emergency, not because it's a bandwagon to jump on, but because we've been working on this for such a long time, since the very beginnings of our party, means that we've got the credibility to take it forward. The credibility that means that we've delivered this in our councils. Let's not forget that it was a Green Party councillor who in Bristol who first instigated the climate emergency policies that have now cascaded across the country, even to Westminster itself. And that inspiration is making change, and it's change we so dramatically need.
And what is it that you say about what you would do that is different from, say, the Labour Party and the Tory Party and the Lib Dems, who would all profess to be pretty green now?
So to begin with, we really believe in communities being where the power is. So even things like our renewables policies is about creating energy generations in community, which will give back to people, such as our community-owned solar, wind and other forms of micro-generation. But also we don't support things like airport expansion. What we want is investment in railway infrastructure that means that flying isn't the cheapest option, and but instead the greenest options are the cheapest and the easiest options. We don't want to be investing in the £5 billion that currently is a government road building programme and instead make sure that we have better public transport. We want to be making sure that we insulate our homes, ensure that we are making all of these opportunities into future-proof jobs with a creation of 3 million jobs that will mean that we can tackle this. I mean, our borrowing figures are £100 billion of borrowing to address this. It's because that's how much it costs. And when a scientists have scrutinised those figures and scrutinised our plans, they've effectively said that this stands up to the test, and this is a perfectly credible way of dealing with this. And it's going to and it is vitally important that we decarbonise every single part of our society, not just the low hanging fruit.
What do you say to those scientists? And I admit that there are fewer of them than there are those who agree with you, who say that actually carbon is not the problem. That carbon is in fact the sort of the stalk of life, if you like. That carbon is produced by all manner of things around the globe, and many of them are actually growing on the planet.
This isn't the time for that kind of debate. This isn't the time to be saying this when we've got people who are flooded at the moment, their homes and their lives devastated as a result of what's clearly the effects of climate change and ecological destruction. The climate emergency is at our door. There's not time for this debate. And I think this is why it's so important that we do get that people vote green, because the reality is that when the UN says we've got just 11 years to tackle the climate emergency, that means that we've got to put clear policy in place in the next 18 months. And it's going to be Greens who can do that when elected to Parliament. And I think that when we look at the economy of this, if we don't work to direct that now, that's going to get even more expensive. But those kinds of expenses, like dealing with people's flood-destroyed properties, aren't just a financial cost, but they've got other costs as well.
Don't you think it's also down to the fact that building has been done on floodplains, that planning has been inadequate, and the actual infrastructure has been woefully badly planned, and that's partly why a lot of these places are flooding as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Nail on the head with that, because it's obviously we are expecting more severe weather through storms and flooding, but it is that ecological change that is making that difference as well. And I think working with, I always get frustrated with during elections when politicians turn up in their wellies to flood-struck places. So I've actually done some work on flooding
just,
across
the ones they've only just bought, right?
Well, exactly. I've done some work on flooding across the country, and it's actually by working with the entire catchment and the entire ecology and environment around a river that you can actually really begin to slow the volumes and the speed of water moving through communities and ensure that we tackle that emergency, the flooding. And I think it's not about big concrete structures that cost a lot and make the water move further down rivers. It's about how we actually address this using the tools that have been proven to work.
No, quite. And also, what about the sort of failures for all sorts of reasons in the planning of where people live as well? Because we've got huge swathes of this country where nobody lives, and then huge other parts of it where there's literally too many people living. What have you got to say about that?
Well, I think there are many issues at stake here. And even when you look at job creation in the last 10 years. Of the 2 million jobs that have been created, 35% of them have been in London. And that creates huge pressures on our cities in general, where this investment's been taken place. But I think that what's important is that we celebrate our rural communities for being rural communities and celebrate our cities as cities and make sure that I don't think that it's about moving people into one or the other. It's about making sure there's genuine support across the board in all of these communities and that none get forgotten.
What about the farming communities? What's your policy on farming?
So we want to, I mean, essentially farmers are custodians of our environment. So we want to support a transition for farmers into effectively more environmentally friendly practices. It's clear at the moment that the role of pesticides, for example, are affecting our ecological systems. Well, we all know the effects that it's having on things like bees and that are fundamental to our food and farming industries. So making sure that we support farmers into a transition that is lower carbon, that is making sure that we tackle a lot of these impacts that we're having through our farming industry. I think it's very easy to forget that all of our food exists because of a top layer of soil and the fact that it rains here, and we need to be working with farmers to protect that.
I've got a question here from one of our listeners who's asking, if a Green candidate isn't standing in a constituency because of the Remain Alliance, how can people vote for the Green Party if that's the case?
Well, we've stood in as many seats as we can. We've stood in more seats than we have done in the last election. I think that fundamentally people, wherever they live, should vote for what they believe in. And at the moment, what I see is people seeing that it's the Green vote that is the vote that they do believe in. I think that we've been standing up for these issues, and for those people who are in those seats, then politics is all about priorities. And I think you need to work out what you want to do.
So are you saying a vote for Remain more important than a vote for the environment then?
No, I said that people should vote for what they believe in. And what I see now is, I mean, there's no such thing as safe seats right now, only safe voters. And when I knock on doors, there seems to be no such thing as a safe voter, as people become increasingly disillusioned with the big parties. And I think that when you look at our policies as the Green Party, whether that's making sure that we tackle the climate emergency, make sure we're providing social justice, making sure that we tackle the inequality, rising inequalities as a result of austerity that have torn apart the very fabric of our communities, whether that is saying yes to Europe and giving people the people's vote, whatever your priorities are, vote for that. But I feel that as a party, our policies that have stood up to scrutiny time after time, are the policies that I know many people are seeing as the policies for the future that are fit for 2019 and fit for the issues that we face today.
And what would you say to people who, for example, drive for a living, like taxi drivers, like van drivers, like lorry drivers, people who, in order to make enough money to feed their family, have to drive around in a car or a van or a lorry? What should they do?
So,
or what would you have them do?
Yeah, so in terms of our policies, we want to encourage as many people to move to use public transport, and that actually benefits those who drive for a living. If you are driving goods, for example, the roads are congested due to the number of cars that could be people using other journeys. So actually, trying to take people off the roads and ensure that they are travelling using trains, trams, coaches and buses is actually a benefit to the congestion that we currently see on our roads.
So you wouldn't penalise people who drive those vehicles?
It's not about penalising. I mean, we need to be addressing air quality. We need to be addressing carbon emissions.
Yeah, but that's what I'm
asking
you. So would you be penalising people who drive taxis and vans and buses and coaches and lorries?
No, absolutely not. It's about a transition, and it's about making the greenest option the cheapest and easiest option for everybody. And that will be better support in electric vehicles, for example. But in the meantime, we appreciate that those vehicles on the road, we're not going to be penalising those people. And if we get to a point where we are looking at those current vehicles, there'd be support in moving to something like electric. But our focus really is on those journeys that are people travelling to work, that are people taking journeys that they simply don't have to take by car and could be taken in other ways, and creating a public transport system that is fit for that. I mean, you see, if you look at London, for example, as a result of a century of investment into public transport, it's cleared up the roads, in a way that makes would mean that all of those, if all those journeys were going by car, the whole of London would be gridlocked. And that
whole of London is gridlocked.
Well, you can imagine how much worse it would be if there hadn't been investment in the underground, in buses and in cycling even. The rise of cyclists in London just shows that people want to take other forms of transport. And I think
to be honest, the policies have worked because people are cycling now because it's actually quicker to cycle than it is to get in a car because the cycle lanes take up as much space as the car lanes. But Amelia, listen, we've got to run. I'm sorry to say, because we've got to get lots more in before the end of the show. Amelia Womack, Deputy Leader of the Green Party. She's also a candidate for Newport West. And these are the other candidates in Newport West. Matthew Evans for the Conservative Party, Ruth Jones for the Labour Party, Ryan Jones, the Liberal Democrats, Jonathan Clark, Plaid Cymru, and Cameron Owen Edwards from the Brexit Party. This is Talk Radio.
A mid-morning dance with the devil.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
On Talk Radio. Oh,
this is the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. You know what to do. Matthew Wright coming up at 1 o'clock. 0344 499 1000 is the number. How about this from Joe? Says, if someone presents themselves to an A&E with a cold or toothache symptoms, as I've witnessed for myself on a number of occasions, why don't they just turn them away? We all know the NHS is ripped off for paracetamols for ages and now wasting money for non-emergencies being triaged and wasting a doctor's time, especially as in the same hospital there is an out-of-hours GP service where an appointment can be made by the 111 service. Well, I think a lot of people are very, very concerned about that. How about this on the Labour broadband front? Nick says, so I remortgaged my house and borrowed thousands to start a business, spent many years, 7 days a week, building it up, only to be told by Labour that I must give 10% of it to someone I've just employed. Labour say they are the party of business. What an absolute joke. And Laura says, your last guest just supported Labour's broadband policy, saying that our economy needs every part of the UK working at maximum productivity. Has he forgotten that if any productivity gains are achieved, Labour will use them to fund a four-day week, not to help the economy? They have said, of course, that they will do that because they want everybody to not have to live to work. Or work to live. I can't remember which way round they do. Whichever way they want to do it, they don't want people to work more than 4 days a week, which, of course, wouldn't work out very well for a lot of businesses. One of them, of course, would be the restaurant business. We're going to talk to Gennaro Contaldo now about soup, because, believe it or not only is soup a wonderful thing to make, a wonderful thing to eat, it could also be really, really good for you as well. Gennaro, very good morning to you.
Good morning. Yes, it is indeed. Special today in London, this cold day. Why don't you make a lovely soup?
I made a wonderful soup last night, Gennaro. I put just very simple stuff in it, you know, an onion, some carrots, some green beans, some potatoes, a little bit of vegetable stock, and away you go. Some cumin seeds, a little bit of oregano. It was lovely.
You are the best. There is a million soups all over the world. The world is united through the soups. You know, soup is good, vegetable soup. This time of the year, grab all the vegetable you can find. You make a massive soup, which you call a minestrone. You can even make a lovely stracciatella with chicken and just the yolk of eggs. It hardly anything, two ingredients, mix all together, you can drink. Also, when children don't want to eat because they're too big pieces of, or perhaps they consider cauliflower, or perhaps they consider broccoli, or perhaps they see the onions. Mash it all up. Give it to the children. They love it. Soup is good for you.
It really is. It's also really easy to make. You know, when I was a kid, my mother, who was not a very good cook, used to cook soup every single night, right? And it was in a pressure cooker, and those are coming back, I'm told, right? And she just used to put a load of barley, a little bit of bacon sometimes, a load of vegetables, even turnips and all that sort of thing, root vegetables that we hated, put it all into this vegetable soup, and it was delicious.
It is delicious. Soup is good. Even in the summer, when it's very, very hot, you can have a soup. Look, tomato and basil soups. You mash it all up, you sieve, and you have a fantastic soup. But not just that, all the roots, vegetable, which this time of the year, they're really good. Mash it all up, cut them inside, make lovely broth. You can do it with chicken, or you can do chicken in the most loved soup, I find out. And also, you can do all the kind of a vegetable, and then put a little bit pastina inside. You know, in Italy, one particular soup which united Italy all together, zuppa di fagioli, pasta and beans.
Yeah, beans, I love that.
And it's good.
Yeah, what about fish soup?
why not? Fish soup is good. There's nothing wrong at all. Make sure the fish is extremely, extremely fresh. And then you make a lovely fish soup. What do? You mix all the crustacean as well, all the vegetable things, all together. And then you remove the shells, and then you have a fantastic fish soup just inside. Toast it or grill a lovely slice of bread and just put them on top. Enjoy.
It is amazing. Actually, now, but listen, we're very enthusiastic about this soup, right? But not just is it tastes good and is it good for you, but apparently, according to a study in Imperial College, it's also good for keeping away diseases, like even malaria. You can, if you eat cabbage soup, apparently, you can ward off malaria.
I didn't know anything about kicks malaria, but it makes me very happy this way. I am a cook and I know something now is good. But one thing I know for sure, you know, soup makes you good. Can you imagine you don't feel well, you got a little bit of fever, you know, you don't want to eat it, your mum comes along, your lover, anybody else, and make a lovely soup. It can be even with a little rice, with a little bit of stock inside, and you will enjoy it as well. But I am a cook. Do you know what I do? My profession is to make people happy through my cooking.
Yes.
And that is one of my happiness, is to cook and make soup. In England, many times, a long time ago, I read an English book to say tossed soup. I said, I want to have a look. What is about this tossed soup?
Toast soup.
So, you know, they made the slice tossed. They put them in a bowl and they put some water on top, hot water on top. The tossed swallow is big and they give it that flavour of the toast. And that is silly.
That's it? Toast? I've never heard anything so mad.
I know. I was shocked.
Crazy.
But, you know, it's good.
All right. Well, so, I'm going to give that a try. What about oxtail soup? That's good.
Yes. Go awful with oxtail soup. I love it. You know, when you make oxtail soup, then you remove the oxtail inside, remove all the bones, and then put it back again inside the liquid. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Do you know, what about for people making the roast this weekend, right? You can take the chicken carcass, can't you, after you finish with it, and put it in a bowl with a load of water, put it in a pot, rather, and boil it and make some chicken soup with it.
Mike, are you going to take my job away from me? Because I can see you can really cook. Let me tell you something. I'll give you a recipe quickly. You know, when you actually do the turkey or Christmas, you know, you cook your lovely turkeys or Christmas, there is quite a bit left on the bone.
Yeah.
What actually you do is just seal the carrots, and onions, and some celery. Just mashed all those bones up with a bit of chicken inside, a turkey inside. Pour hot water on top and let it bubbling along. And then after a little while, you remove the bones and you have a fantastic after Christmas turkey soup.
Christmas soup. You can call it Christmas soup. Brilliant.
Yes, come on. That is marvelous. Even with the meat, you see, the old day, I think they're still doing that. If you go to the butcher, you say, look, have you got any ribs or, you know, big ribs left and also other different carcass? No, you can make a lovely strong beef soup.
Nice.
That is, and then, it's, again, anything up, then when you actually boil it, you know, there is always little pieces, not the fat, of the meat around the bones. You can actually move all those bits and pieces and you let you put it back inside the liquid again. And that is a smash it. Or also, when actually you have a kind of a soup, there is too much of everything, scoop them all up, mash them all up, and put them inside a little ravioli. And then you cook with a little bit of butter and sage. Oh, my God. And there is no hand. It's, making soup is like a risotto.
Yes.
Now, did you see how many? Rivers in the world? They all run to the sea, and the sea says never enough. This is the way soup. Because there's so many different.
It's amazing. You've made me very hungry. I have to say, Gennaro. Luckily, I've got some of that soup that I made last night. So when I go home this afternoon, I'm going to have some more of it.
But don't you think it's great that actually it's good for malaria? I didn't know that.
Yeah, so now I'm not going to get malaria either, which is great.
No, me too. Oh, my gosh. You know what I'm going to do now?
You're going to head off on holiday?
Yes, you know, yeah, good. Let's not have any more injection of malaria.
Yeah, that's it.
Let's have a soup. Do you know what I'm going to do now?
What?
I'm going to make a chickpea soup.
Chickpea soup, now you're talking.
A chickpea soup.
Put some chorizo in it.
on, let's do it. Why not?
Fantastic. Fantastic. Gennaro, very, very well done. What an enthusiastic man about soup. Contaldo. Gennaro Contaldo. What a man. What a guy. What some great ideas there. Christmas soup, chickpea soup, cabbage soup, don't get malaria soup. Amazing.
More gun talk from a water pistol from the Farmer of Fury.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
On Talk Radio.
You're listening to Talk Radio. We are your election station, of course. We will be here through the night on election night, on December the 12th, of course, going into Friday the 13th, when a new government, hopefully, will be formed so that actually something can happen. Who knows which way it's going to go? The big debate tonight between Jeremy Corbyn and, of course, Boris Johnson is taking place on ITV. We'll be bringing you all of that live as it happens right here on Talk Radio. Let's talk to Mike in York. Hello, Mike.
Hiya. Morning. Morning. What a beautiful day.
Yeah, it's lovely, isn't it? Lovely cold.
Yeah. Gets the old things going, yeah.
Well, we live in the northern European climes. It's supposed to be cold, you know. It's not supposed to be hot like it is in Spain. It's supposed to be, you know, cold and miserable.
Stew and dumpling weather, Mike.
And absolutely. Couldn't agree more. Now, what are you going to tell me?
Well, these manifestos are going to be completely different to any other. In so much as now that they've brought the law lords in to make decisions on politics...
Oh, yeah.
This is a verbal contract. This is a verbal contract between the politicians and the people. Uh-huh. If, for instance, somebody says, well, we guarantee to nationalise the buses and provide a good bus service, then they must do it. They can't say when they're in, because they've got votes from that promise, that, you know, kind of, we didn't know what we were saying and we didn't know what we were promising. That no longer the case. Now, a verbal contract, just like I was when I was self-employed, if I promised somebody it was verbal, then I was held to it by the law.
But how is that... you know how when you do a bit of contract law and you say, right, the offer was made by the politicians, you then accept that offer by voting for them, I suppose, right?
Yes.
And then normally there's supposed to be some kind of consideration as part of that contract, isn't there? I don't know what that would be.
Well, that'd be their salaries.
Okay. Yeah, paid for by the taxpayer. Okay, I'm going with that. Okay, I like that.
You know, and...
So sue them, you mean, if they don't do it?
Well, what I can't understand is they're making promises that they can't...
Yes, no, I'm with you. I like it. Jolyon Moore might be available then, because, of course, if we've already left the European Union, you won't have anybody to sue. Really? All the debates are done. No more proroguing of Parliament, you know. I'll get him on the line for you.
Can you imagine those 11 law lords? They're going to be very busy.
They are. They're not going to be passing any legislation about anything else. They'll just be talking about government all the time. It's a great call, though. I like that. If they break the deal with us, the covenant, we sue them. Let's talk to Harry in Portsmouth. Hello, Harry.
Oh, yes, Mike. I will talk about that Nicolas Cage business in a minute.
Okay.
I'm just referring to, have we got some Ben letters printed off? You know, those letters that have got a space for the politicians to sign. Perhaps after yesterday's conversation on Grenfell Tower, on that block in Manchester.
The cladding, right.
Perhaps the journalists should be chasing every candidate down the street saying, please sign this letter, which we know they don't want to confirm that the first business of the new parliament will be within 3 months to have got a programme, never mind the green apprenticeship of Labour, a programme to get every single one of these blocks sorted.
Yes, a very good idea. I like the sound of that, Harry.
We've got Highbury College down here, 10-storey block, £2.9 million cladding bill. At the moment, the fire brigade has said it's safe, and I assume that's because there's a concierge service. There's a quote from an anonymous student says that they weren't told about the block and they'd lived in it.
And they didn't know what about the cladding?
No.
But if the to be fair, though, Harry, if the fire service say it's safe, then you have to take their word for it, don't you?
That's right. It's ACM cladding, which is the only one the government want to give money out for at the moment, even though there's four other types.
Okay.
But I assume it's only because there will be a concierge service and the full fire alarm system in place.
Right, OK.
But it's basically a block that has got a £2.9 million bill to be paid when because of this situation.
I know. It's a shocking state of affairs. What do you want to say about Nicolas Cage?
Well, Nicolas Cage, you said he's playing himself as, you know, some sort of narcissist.
Yes.
Well, I'm thinking of someone who probably wouldn't be a narcissist. I can't quite remember the details because all these war films end up merging into one. But John Gregson was one of those actors who appeared in a lot of them black and white and even colour war films.
Did he?
And he appeared in one, and I don't know whether it was Arnhem or whatever, I can't quite remember. But back in about 2014, on another station, radio station, he gave an interview. It was about 3 years before he actually died.
Right.
And then when he died, you know how they give a quick posthumous...
obituary.
Obituary, that's it.
Yeah.
Well, the same person who'd actually interviewed him for the same programme 3 years previously mentioned this John Gregson. And what it was, he was actually there in the Second World War. I think he was playing quite a high rank. And when he was cast in the film, he didn't even get to play himself. He was cast as, I think, three or four ranks lower, and he was probably about the fourth appearance part in the film.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So there's a part. He was actually the real person there, and when they came to make the film about it, the feature war film, he didn't even get the actual part.
Ah, astonishing. Harry, thank you very much indeed. This is, of course, Talk Radio. We talk about all manner of things here. We're going to talk about soup in a little while. But keep your calls coming on the debate. Keep your calls coming on Nicolas Cage, if you wish, because he is a man who is doing what many people who are in the acting profession would love to do. He's starring as himself in a film about himself. Amazing, isn't it?
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
We're going to now talk about Jeremy Corbyn and the Labour Party and, of course, the debate tonight, the first big television debate between Jeremy Corbyn and the Prime Minister. I'm delighted to say, though, that John McDonnell is with us now. John, a very good afternoon to you. Welcome.
Hiya.
Thanks very much for joining us. Big question tonight from Boris Johnson to your colleague Jeremy is going to be about the European Union. He's going to ask him, supposedly, if he personally wants to remain in the European Union or leave it. Do you think he's going to answer it?
Yeah, so he'll set out Labour Party policy, which is basically when we go into government, we'll negotiate a new, sensible and credible deal. And we'll put that before the British people, as well as Remain, and the British people will decide it.
But what about his own opinion, though? Why won't he answer that?
Well, we've got to wait and see what deal comes back from the European Union once we've negotiated that. Then the party will meet, we'll hold a special conference, and that decision will then be made by the party, and Jeremy will respect the decision of the party and implement whatever comes out of that referendum.
So does it not matter whether he wants to stay or leave, then?
Well, I think it's important that what he does is he's a prime minister who's willing to bring the party, the country together, as he's done the party. It's a matter of we need a consensus builder in government now, and that's exactly what Jeremy will be.
What's your view on leaving or remaining, just personally?
Well, we'll see what comes back to the EU. I've always said I can't see a better deal than Remain, but let's see what comes back. We'll put it to the people, then we'll implement what the British people decide. And I think that's the only way we'll be able to get people back together again.
Now, in your speech today, you talked about companies sharing the wealth, as it were, with the rest of the people. I think a lot of people would agree with what you had to say. But perhaps the methods by which you would make that happen might be questionable in terms of your words, which would be that you would require companies to hand over a portion of their shares.
Well, we've been arguing for a long time in this country that we need a stakeholder economy where everyone has a stake in the economy and have a stake in their local company that they work. And one of the ways of doing that is, well, transferring a small number of shares to the workers themselves. And what we've said is that we want to set up what we call an inclusive ownership fund, where 1% of the shares of a company a year for 10 years are transferred across into collective ownership by those workers. Now, everything we've heard about employee ownership and employee involvement and stakeholder involvement has said that longer-term decision-making takes place, and at the same time, you have increases in productivity. So that's exactly what this proposal is all about.
In terms of the polling at the moment, it's always very interesting to look at polls before elections, because depending on who's winning them, people will say, well, they're not important, or they are unimportant. What I think is interesting at the moment is the polling shows the Conservative Party to be ahead of Labour from anywhere from 17 points to 6 points. But people are now saying the trend is different from the last time around when you did so well to catch up to Theresa May, because the trend is showing that actually Labour's not catching the Tories at the moment.
Well, if you look at what happened last time, it was only when our manifesto was produced and we were well into the campaign that actually the trends picked up speed. And the trend at the moment is moving towards us, and that's exactly as it was in 2017. And actually, you know, even towards the end, the polls still got it wrong, for on the day, everyone was shocked and surprised, not us, but everyone else was shocked and surprised at just how well we did. And that's exactly, I think, what you'll see this time around.
Well, it's saying this time around that it's not actually moving towards you, but we won't dwell on that because we haven't got for very long. What about all those constituencies, particularly up in the north of England, where Labour heartlands voted to leave the European Union, and an awful lot of voters are disappointed with Labour's stance on Brexit and may well vote for the Brexit Party?
Well, I think also what you'll find in those constituencies, although Brexit is a big issue, the other issues are equally salient, and that is about education and health and investment in policing and what's happening on their streets, but also the overriding issue of the existential threat of climate change. And on the doorstep, what we're finding is, yes, of course, some people raise Brexit, but people are interested in all those other issues as well. And that's, I think, where Labour are demonstrating that when we can go into government, we can actually tackle those issues. So again, if you remember, in the last general election, we were 24 points behind in the polls when that election started. I think if the campaign had gone on another week, we'd be in government now. But I think you'll see in these coming weeks, in the run-up to the general election, as more and more people get registered and more people start addressing the real issues of this campaign around it, NHS and education, as well as Brexit, I think you'll see that we're in line with the Labour government.
The problem with the business advice that you're giving out, though, of course, is the Labour Party itself made a loss of 655,000 last year, lost quite a lot of subscribers, about 100,000 in the previous year, supposedly down to people not liking Jeremy Corbyn. How are you going to make that money back?
Well, it's interesting. We're picking up thousands of members every week at the moment. I think 2 weeks ago, I think we had 5,000 new members, 3,000. We're picking up members hand over fist at the moment. So on that basis, we have a strong party, the largest party in Western Europe. On that basis, I think we're in a good position, both financially, but also in terms of the election campaign itself. We're on the doorsteps right the way across the country, arguing our case, and I believe persuasively convincing people that Labour needs to be in government.
One final question for you, John. What do you think Prince Andrew should do? Do you think he should go and cooperate with the US authorities?
I think he should. I think he should cooperate with all the relevant agencies to ensure that the victims of Epstein and others get justice. And I think my advice to him was to do that, of course.
Thank you very much indeed. John McDonnell, Shadow Chancellor of the Exchequer, and talking on behalf of the Labour Party. Tonight, of course, the Labour Party will take on the Tories in the first big TV debate, Jeremy Corbyn versus Boris Johnson. It's going to be a belter, I think. We're going to be talking about it a lot tomorrow, of course. Coming up, though, we'll take some more of your calls, 0344 499 1000. John McDonnell, Shadow Chancellor and Labour candidate for Hayes and Harlington, amongst other candidates there, of course, Christian People's Alliance, Chika Amadi, Wayne Bridges from the Conservative Party, Christine West from the Green Party, Alex Cunliffe from the Liberal Democrats, and Harry Bhopari from the Brexit Party.
More gun talk from a water pistol from the Farmer of Fury.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham
on Talk Radio. Hope that you
don't come easy to me. How can I find
And they play some bad music on this station, don't they? Goodness gracious me, I'll tell you what. We do, however, put out the playlist at the end of the show, which people seem to like. Mark Gale is in charge, and I know that sometimes he chooses bad music deliberately just to annoy me, but that's okay. I don't mind that. We've had a fantastic show again today. Lots of you have said some wonderful things. Many of you have had some great opinions, and we'll take some more of those tomorrow. We might even squeeze a couple in before the end of this show. But right now, we're going to take some time out to talk to Nadia Essex, who is a dating expert, of course, mum-to-be, because I don't know what she's going to say about this, but apparently bad grammar spells disaster if you're trying to go out with somebody and you're trying to lure them into your world. Nadia, very good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
Now, I often get accused of being the grammar police on Twitter because I do like to point out when people have made a mistake and got something wrong, particularly if they're having a go at me. You know, I'm a bit more forgiving if they're being nice. But basically, I do get annoyed by people who use bad grammar.
I mean, same. This is why I like you, Mike, because we're exactly the same. And when it comes to dating, if you can't even be bothered to speak in full sentences with the correct spelling and grammar, and you're that level of lazy, there's no, I'm out. Because where do you, if you're so lazy you can't speak in a full sentence and use proper grammar, then where does it stop? Do you brush your teeth every day? Do you wash yourself properly? Do you have good personal hygiene? Like, laziness, it's the epitome of laziness.
Yes, that's interesting, isn't it? So you're going to say to me that if somebody's lazy about the way they write or speak, then that might be an indication of something.
I think it is an indication of something. I think if you're in terms of dating, if you're trying to have a conversation with somebody, especially over text message, and you cannot be bothered to check that what you're saying is correct, then it's insulting.
Well, it is. And also, if they're sent, I mean, the trouble is so many people, I think, and I've been guilty of this, I suppose, in the past, you're doing it on the run all the time, aren't you? I mean, you're like, everybody's got their phones going all the time. You can't wait till you get off the train. You have to just send it now. You have to send it while you're going up on the escalator. You know, you have to send it before you get into the car. It's like nobody has any time anymore.
Well, I still find the time to speak in full, proper, grammatical, correct sentences.
What a woman.
Of course. I mean, like, yeah, we're not going to get on. If you speak to me in text talk and you want to have a date with me, trust me, we're not going to get on because I don't think that's appropriate. What you say to your mates is different if you're trying to woo me and if you're trying to date me. Like, that, yeah, we don't have the same values.
No, and what about, do you not fear, though, that you might be being a bit discriminatory because you're basically sort of ruling out anyone who might not have had perhaps the greatest education and you know, they might not know how good their grammar should be?
Oh, I mean, you know, in the world of autocorrect, Google, and, you know, we have something like 600,000 words in the English dictionary, that there is no excuse. You know, you do not have to have a great education to be able to speak in proper sentences without text talk. You do not have to have a good education to make the effort to make sure what you're saying is spelled correctly. It's just it's for me, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
And you have a tick. I have a tick box when I'm dating of what things are we morally compatible? Are we aesthetically compatible? And, you know, speaking and grammar and connection and language is an important part of it.
So, what about emojis? Because, I mean, nowadays we're learning that people are now studying emojis. What about emoji use? How are you feeling about that?
I'm not mad at the use of emojis, but you have to be so careful with them. I don't like an emoji in replace of conversation.
No.
But I do like an emoji, for example, if you're writing something and it's supposed to be funny, but you know it's close to the bone, put a little laughing face so that I know that the tone is sarcasm.
Yes.
So I'm not mad. You've got to calm down with the emojis. No more than two emojis per message.
Yes,
and
no, I think
from man to woman, you know, you've got to say that. Any man that sends you a load of emojis, I just find weird.
Yeah, that is a bit odd. What about the guys that go the other way? Like, imagine what sort of a message you'd get from somebody like John Burko, you know, who's constantly using more complicated words than he needs to, constantly trying to impress you by saying something that doesn't have to be quite so you know, sort of, I don't know, flowery in terms of the way that he's saying it?
I mean, he's probably a bad example because I think he's an awful human being, an absolute traitor. But if somebody was like that, I actually would find it quite... It depends. If they were doing it in a sort of melodic kind of fun, tongue-in-cheeky way, I appreciate it. But if you're doing it to try and be patronising and you just use a load of words for the sake of trying to sound educated...
Yeah.
Again, we're not going to get on because I just think that's a narcissistic trait that I'm not down with. But I love it. You know, I used to work with Tom Reed Wilson from Celeb Good Eating, who is a wordsmith.
Yes,
and he is fantastic, and he talks in these wonderful language that I know nothing about. But it's just it's beautiful to listen to, and I find it endearing. But it, again, it's tone. You know, are you trying to patronise me, or are you trying to woo me?
Yeah, and you know, sometimes big words are fun, but sometimes they are, as you say, a bit pretentious. I'm a couple of people are telling me that red lines for them when people say could of or should of instead of could have.
Yeah, I mean, that I kind of understand because it's something that it's annoying, but it's a niggle. But there's levels, isn't there? Like, I can't...
Well, a lot of people do it, and I've actually seen people telling me who have been to journalism school that actually in journalism school they said that's a perfectly permissible usage, which it isn't, as far as I'm concerned. It's
really?
Wrong.
That's so interesting. Yeah, I mean, it's a niggle that annoys me, and if I spot it, it's a red flag,
right,
and something that then I'm aware of. So, you know, again, it's just basic. It is basic fundamental spelling and grammar that it doesn't matter if you've had a good or bad education. We do all get taught it. You know, we do. So, and if you don't get taught it, you can learn. Like, read a book, go on Google, use autocorrect.
Yeah.
Like, educate yourself.
Get a dictionary.
Get a dictionary. I mean, you've got a dictionary on your phone. You know, it's not something that nowadays it's, you know, understandable. Make the bit of extra effort to make a good sort of first impression.
Yeah. I think that's perfectly good advice, Nadia. Thank you very much indeed. Nadia Essex, dating expert, telling you the way it is. Don't be lazy. Don't be sloppy. Don't say things in text speak. Use the English language properly and you might get a date. Let's talk to JW, who's in Evesham. Hello, JW.
Oh, Miss Graham, hey, first of all, thank you for all the great work you've been doing. I know it's an underappreciated job, but hey, you're doing it well.
The fact that people ring in and talk to me is enough appreciation for me, so thank you for doing that.
Okay. My complaint is this lady you've just had on,
yes.
Nadia. Sure, she means well, but you know, what if this person has a speech impediment or a learning disability?
Right. You know, well, I mean, I guess
a
speech...
I have a 14-year-old...
Go on.
Also, I have a 14-year-old girl whose habit of pronouncing, she's perfectly healthy. You know, sometimes I question her mentality, but teenager girl. But,
right.
You know, instead of saying water, water, you know, like...
Water.
Oh.
Well, water. But well, that's just Cockney, isn't it?
Yeah, this lady here, though, reminds me a few years ago, I was on a dating site because I'm a single dad, and I do have three girls I was raising. And... she reminds me of a lady here in Worcestershire who claimed that any guy who says he's a single dad is a liar and a cheat. You
really?
Know, why? I don't know why she makes me think that.
I don't know why she would make you think that either. But I guess, I mean, it's the old adage again, isn't it, JW? I mean, it depends, doesn't it, on the person. I mean, if there's a very beautiful woman that you want to date and she wants to date you and she sends you a grammatically incorrect text, you're not going to go, no thanks, are you?
No, I won't. I tend to overlook that thing, but I some people have called me the grammar police myself. But,
well, there you go. And how's that working out for you?
Yeah, I pay no mind to it.
Okay. Well, that's good. Well, JW, listen, thank you for calling you. Got another quick call to squeeze in, so I'm going to let you go. Paul's at Islington. Hi, Paul.
Hey, Mike, how you doing, mate?
Very well, sir. What can I do for you?
She finished her sentence with, I mean, like. Now, if you're going to come on, if you're going to be the grammatical police, that's fine. But you can't have an error.
Well, you could say that's but hang on. Could you not say that's an idiom, though?
There
you go.
Not in the context of how she was putting it, no.
Well, I don't know.
It has to be consistency there with what she's saying. And to finish it with, I mean, like. I mean, I've looked up in the Oxford English, and I can't find it. And that's the whole point, isn't it, about being grammatically fluid and correct? And she certainly wasn't. Now, I'm dyslexic, so, and I don't think men really care when we're sending a text that much, whether we've...
Yeah, but maybe, you know, it's maybe
the
it's working.
But it's not that important to us.
Well, no, but is it important to the people you're sending the message to, though? Maybe.
Well, I think it's important for her because she said, "If I'm dating men, so that tells me she's single, and I think she's probably going to be single for a long time with that type
you're
of
making
an
a
attitude."
Lot of, you're making a lot of judgments here. I'm going to tell you, Paul. A lot of judgments.
No, I'm on dating sites, and I get it a lot from women. It's almost like, really, are you going to be that anal about something? Really, it bothers you that much? Uh-huh. Whether somebody hasn't finished off, you know...
I don't think we're saying that it would rule something out. It's just that it would be a factor that would mitigate against you. That's all.
I don't want anything to do with that person. I mean, crikey, if that's going to be a precursor for what they're going to be like in a relationship, stay away.
Fair enough. Well said, Paul. I can tell you that Nadia's a fine woman. She's about to have a baby, I think, soon. So I don't think she is single, actually. But that's another story. We will ask her the next time she comes on. But thank you to all of you for your calls. This is, of course, the Independent Republican Mike Graham. We will be back tomorrow at 10 after the big debate tonight.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
So if you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1 Monday to Friday on Talk Radio via DAB, online or via the Talk Radio app. If you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.